Pacifica Network. This is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, the battle for New York. More than 500,000 people march through the streets of New York as the Republican National Convention kicks off.
I pay the high price for speech. I pay with my son's life for coming here today and say, Bush lie and who die? My son and beautiful 972 American boys and girls.
And we go to the Time Warner extravaganza, feting thousands of journalists who've come to the convention. We'll be joined by veteran White House correspondent Helen Thomas. She's covered presidents for more than half a century. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman as we break with convention, the battle for New York. Hundreds of thousands of protesters took to the streets of New York Sunday in the largest demonstration ever at a political convention. Organizers with United for Peace and Justice estimate more than 500,000 protesters marched past Madison Square Garden, where the Republican National Convention opens today. In New York, major protests against President Bush began on Friday when 5,000 bikers took part in a critical mass bike ride. Some 15,000 and marched on Saturday in one of the city's largest marches in history. Actually, more than 500,000 people marched on Sunday. Today, two more large demonstrations scheduled to mark the start of the convention. Over the weekend, police arrested some 400 protesters, four activists who participated in a banner drop on Thursday at the Plaza Hotel, now face 25 years in prison. They were each charged with assault because a police officer was injured when responding to the incident. Meanwhile, Vice President Dick Cheney arrived in New York Sunday, spoke at Ellis Island in an event closed off to the public. He spoke with a background of Lower Manhattan skyline as the backdrop. We'll have more on the protests throughout the program. The FBI now believes the Pentagon's top Iran analyst secretly passed on classified information on Iran to the Israeli government via AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. The Pentagon official has been identified as Larry Franklin, who was closely tied to Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith. Newsweek reports Franklin's role was uncovered after the FBI put officials from AIPAC under surveillance for possible espionage. Franklin worked in the Pentagon's Near East and South Asia Bureau, which was headed by Feith, who also oversaw the controversial Office of Special Plans. They were both part of the neoconservative wing of the Pentagon that advocated for the invasion of Iraq and has pushed for a hardline stance toward Iran. Franklin has also been accused of secretly meeting with Manuhar Garbanifar. Garbanifar is an Iranian arms dealer who played a key role in the Iran-Contra scandal and who advocates the overthrow of the Iranian government. Israel's rejected the espionage allegations. In the 1980s, Israel officially announced it would no longer spy on the United States following the conviction of U.S. Navy analyst Jonathan Pollard of spying for Israel. Although AIPAC is the center of the spying scandal, scores of Republican delegates and elected officials attended an AIPAC party Sunday night in New York. Speakers included former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and Senate Majority Leader Dr. Bill Frist. Tonight, Giuliani will give the major primetime address at the opening of the Republican National Convention. In Afghanistan, at least seven people died on Sunday after a truck bomb blew up the headquarters of the U.S. multinational company DynCorp. The U.S. company provides a private militia to protect Afghan President Hamid Karzai and trains the Afghan police force. It's the first major attack in Kabul, Afghanistan in more than a year. The Taliban claimed responsibility for the attack. On Saturday, 10 people died, including 9 children, in an explosion at a school in southeastern Afghanistan. Today, the U.S. government warned its citizens to take strict security measures and avoid potential target areas. And in election news, the New York Times has come out calling for the abolishment of the Electoral College as a means to select the nation's president. The Times wrote an editorial, quote, "It's a ridiculous setup which thwarts the will of the majority, distorts presidential campaigning, and has the potential to produce a true constitutional crisis. There should be a bipartisan movement for direct election of the president," the editorial read. In the 2000 election, Al Gore won the popular vote by a margin of 500,000 votes, but lost the election. President Bush won the electoral vote after the Supreme Court ruled in favor over stopping the Florida recount. In campaign news, the former Speaker of the Texas House, Ben Barnes, has revealed he helped President George Bush and the sons of other rich families get into the Texas National Guard so they could avoid serving in Vietnam. Meanwhile, on Saturday, President Bush admitted on the Today Show that he believes John Kerry was heroic during the Vietnam War. He said, quote, "Going to Vietnam was more heroic than my flying fighter jets. He was in harm's way and I wasn't," said George Bush. And in other news from the Republican convention, the Justice Department has opened a criminal investigation into the New York City Indy Media Center. The Justice Department is demanding Indy Media's internet service provider hand over records regarding posts on the site that listed the names of Republican delegates. The federal government's claiming the posting of the delegates' names may constitute a form of voter intimidation. The American Civil Liberties Union is defending Indy Media and the internet provider Calix in the case. Ann Beeson of the ACLU said, quote, "We can't see any legitimate purpose behind this investigation, and it looks to us like another attempt to repress legitimate political dissent." The late Edwin Starr, Stop the War, here on Democracy Now!, breaking with convention, the battle for New York, broadcasting over 240 stations as Democracy Now! Pioneers the largest public media collaboration in the country on Pacifica radio stations, where we welcome the new Denver station to the family of community radio stations around the country. KGNU has bought a new Denver station. We welcome everyone, public access TV stations, PBS, both satellite networks, Dish Networks, Free Speech TV, Channel 9415, as well as DirecTV, Link TV, Channel 375. I'm Amy Goodman, here with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, yesterday was a historic day. More than 500,000 people took to the streets of New York in a march organized by the nation's largest anti-war organization, United for Peace and Justice. March organizers said the numbers far exceeded their expectations. In fact, it was so massive that the lead contingent had finished marching long before thousands of people could even move from the starting point at Union Square. UFPJ organizers said the procession was a victory of courage over fear and a rejection of what they said was a concerted effort by law enforcement agencies agencies and several powerful media outlets in New York to scare people out of taking to the streets to protest. Here is United for Peace and Justice National Coordinator Leslie Kagan.
Well, I think today was absolutely fabulous. That what happened today was that people from all walks of life, from every community of New York, and really from all around the country, gathered and said, for this day, we are going to stand together, and in one voice, we're going to say no to the Bush agenda. And what we understand is that that agenda has many parts, and some of us work on some parts of that agenda, but if we don't work together, we're never going to defeat that agenda. And I think today, with the hundreds of thousands of people that came out, and it was much bigger than we had anticipated. I think we've sent a very clear message, not only to George Bush, but also to John Kerry, that this movement is alive, it is strong, that we are determined to end this occupation in Iraq, we're determined to turn around the economic priorities of this country, we're determined to end the Patriot Act, the whole package of foreign policy and domestic policy issues, we are determined to keep working on. And today was, you know, that moment of hope and that moment of potential. And that's what you saw out on the streets of New York.
That was Leslie Kagan of United for Peace and Justice. The march was a massive, slow-moving circle around central Manhattan, going up New York's 7th Avenue, past Madison Square Garden, and back to Union Square. The march was overwhelmingly a peaceful protest, though there were some 200 or so arrests made yesterday throughout Manhattan, most of them after the march had concluded. This weekend, more than 400 people were arrested at various demonstrations and direct actions, and a small number of activists are facing serious felony charges. There have been multiple cases of significant police violence against demonstrators, and there have been police officers injured. At least one suffered third-degree burns. But the major story of the day was the sheer size and nonviolence of the march, which was entitled Say No to the Bush Agenda. At the front of the march, actor Danny Glover, filmmaker Michael Moore, families who lost loved ones in Iraq, several Democratic Congress members, and the Reverend Jesse Jackson. Here is a snapshot of yesterday's march as captured by Democracy Now! Teams spread out across the crowd.
Yeah, yeah! Anthem with Bush! Move, move!
Today's World Says No to the Bush Agenda was truly a historic event. We believe it may be the largest ever protest outside a political convention in the United States, and it's clearly one of the largest protests ever in New York City history. Hundreds of thousands of people came together from all over the United States, representing a huge array of communities and constituencies, but joining together in one voice to say, no to the lies, no to the war, no to the greed and hate, no to the policies of the Bush administration, which have been so destructive to the lives of people all around the world.
Clear a street!
Yeah, yeah!
Follow up with the people!
Yeah, yeah!
My name is Greg Jishnani. I'm at Union Square by Broadway. The march is ending right behind me, and I'm just announcing that there's an informal picnic set up at Central Park in the Great Lawn at 3 p.m. The city has denied any permits for a rally at Central Park, but everyone still has to know that it's their right to peaceably assemble in small groups and have a picnic and let the city know that it's our park. The park doesn't belong to the Republican National Convention. The park doesn't belong to the police. It belongs to the people of New York City. And so we're just announcing that people should come and assemble and enjoy their lunches in the beauty of the park.
Those were just some of the sights and sounds of yesterday's massive march. UFPJ was denied a permit to hold a rally in Central Park yesterday. But before the march kicked off, the leaders of the procession held a press conference standing in front of the hundreds of thousands of people gathering on 7th Avenue. We begin with filmmaker Michael Moore.
We're here today because we're really happy. We're happy that the Republicans only have a couple months left. And so we're here to welcome them. Show them a good time. We know they're feeling a little depressed, seeing how the end is near for them. I'd feel that way if I were them. So, you know, we're going to give them a nice smile and a wave as we go up 7th Avenue here. And this week, while the Republicans are in town, whatever we can do to encourage them to sign up, and we're going to have recruiters around, any of them who would like to join our military and go and fight the war that they're willing to send poor people to go and fight. In fact, just to borrow an idea from Congressman Rangel, I really think we need to bring back the draft, but only for the sons of politicians and the sons of executives of Fortune 500 companies. I think if they had to go first, we'd find ourselves in a lot less of these situations. Last month at the Democratic Convention, I asked Bill O'Reilly a question that he could not answer. And that question was, would you be willing to sacrifice your child to secure Fallujah? That is our question to these Republicans here in town. And I think we know the answer. And so let's stop sacrificing all the children, both in this country and Iraq. There is a way out of this, and that way is now. That way is now. We want an end to this war. We want the troops home. And it's just not going to work with us there. And we owe a huge apology to the people of Iraq for creating the amount of death and destruction that we've created there. So, very sorry that the city of New York couldn't figure out how to allow us to have a peaceful rally in Central Park. It made absolutely no sense, and in fact, it's made more and more sense to me that this is exactly what they wanted, chaos. We're here to show them that that's not what they're going to get, and that we, those of us here who are speaking, and all the people back there, we are the majority of this country. The majority of this country opposes this war. The majority of this country wants the Bush administration out of office. The majority never voted for the Bush administration. And the majority are here to say it's time to have our country back in our hands. Thank you very much for being here.
Michael Moore at the beginning of the massive march yesterday in New York. Another person who addressed the crowd was Fernando Suarez del Solar. He lost his son, Jesus, in Iraq.
I paid the high price for speech. I pay with my son's life for coming here today and say, Bush lie and who die? My son and beautiful 972 American boys and girls. We need to say, Mr. Bush and Republican Party, stop the occupation in Iraq. Bring the home now, today, not tomorrow. I lost my son. My grandson lost the father. And this one is only one story. Mr. Bush destroyed more than 972 families here in home and thousands and thousands in Iraq. The people today have the right for say, Bush, get out the White House. Thank you.
And these are some of the voices we've heard. We'll go to more after the break at the beginning of this unprecedented march at a political convention. We turn now in our break to Johnny Cash and Man in Black.
Well, you wonder why I always dress in black, why you never see bright colors on my back. Somber tone. Well, there's a reason for the things that I have on. I wear the black for the poor and the beaten down, living in the hopeless, hungry side of town. I wear it for the prisoner who has long paid for his crime, but is there because he's a victim of the time. I wear the black for the those who've never read or listened to the words that Jesus said about the road to happiness through love and charity. Why, you think he's talking straight to you and me? Well, we're doing mighty fine, I do suppose, in our streak of lightning cars and fancy clothes. But just so we're reminded of the ones who are...
The late Johnny Cash, Man in Black. This is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Protesters have called for a Man in Black block and are scheduling a protest Tuesday outside a Republican celebration of the life of Johnny Cash at Sotheby's at 4 p.m. The protesters saying they're trying to defend the honor of Johnny Cash, who never identified with a political party. Their website is defendjohnnycash.org. As we continue with the sounds and the sights of the protest yesterday that wove its way through Lower Manhattan, we turn now to the Democratic elected officials who also spoke, including New York City Council member Charles Barron.
The people united will never be defeated. And that's the message that we are delivering here today. We already won. There has been more coverage of the protest than the convention. We're saying to the judge, the park belongs to the people. We're saying to the police, the park belongs to the people. And we're saying to the mayor, the park belongs to the people. And that's where we will be when we finish this march. That is our park. We need a regime change in Washington and New York and places all over this country. We need regime changes here, not in Iraq. We say to our people, in the hood, in the black neighborhoods, that we have to come out for these rallies. We will be rallying in Harlem on the 2nd, September 2nd. We're going to be in Harlem. We're going to bring out our neighborhoods for policy changes that we're fighting for. They're cutting Section 8. They're cutting programs all over this country for the poor, and we're going to rally our people and say that we will not take it. So we are honored here today to be out, and we are making history. We already won. This is a victory for the people.
Thank you, Councilman Barron. The head of the New York State Congressional Delegation, my congressman from Central Harlem, Charles Rangel.
One day, someone's going to ask, when the world went crazy, and when Bush went into Iraq, and when lives were lost, and jobs were lost, and hope was lost, what were you doing? Those of you who are here today will be able to tell your kids and your grandkids that you tried to bring some sanity to this world that we inherited. Never before in the history of the United States has our nation gone to war unilaterally and lost so many lives and so many friends in such a short period of time. And for the president and his party to have the chutzpah to return to the scene of the tragedy that we suffered here should be a notice for the entire country to say, we're mad as hell and we're just not taking it anymore. It's time for Bush and all of them to go, and it's time to impeach Rumsfeld on the way to the polls.
Councilwoman Margarita Lopez.
As the council member who represents, together with Alan Gerson, the epicenter of September 11, I'm here to say two things. Number one, the same way they lied to us in downtown Manhattan that the air was filthy and full of poison, they lied to the nation about the war in Iraq. And it needs to be made very clear today here. They lie to us about Iraq. They are assassinating people in Iraq. They sending our children to be killed, and it need to stop. Mr. President, the imposed president, it's time for you to leave the White House and to bring our men and women back to America.
That was City Councilwoman Margarita Lopez from the Lower East Side. Before that, Harlem Congressman Charles Rangel and New York City Councilman Charles Barron, who was running for mayor of New York in 2005. Another of those who led the procession was the Reverend Jesse Jackson, but he almost didn't make it. In fact, he had probably traveled the furthest of anyone to be there. Just a day earlier, he was in the Darfur region of Sudan.
I just arrived this morning from the Sudan, the Darfur region, where 1.5 million people have been displaced, sleeping on the sands of the Sahara Desert, 1.5 million people. The world's greatest humanitarian disaster. It rained the night before last. Now they sleep in mud. 50,000 have died in the last 2 months. Approximately 1,000 people a day are dying. They need and deserve our help. The world must not betray the Sudan through silence. For too long, we have been much tolerant of African suffering and pain, tolerant of an African slave trade for which we've never apologize after 246 years, a tolerant of apartheid in South Africa for much too long, tolerant of a Holocaust in Germany for much too long, a tolerant of Rwanda, and now here is the Sudan. We have some moral obligation to use our strength to, in fact, have an arms embargo, to use our strength to disarm the Janjaweed, to use our strength to get in at least $1 billion for logistical support and support for the African Union, that they might have safe passage of food and medicine and tents and relief. I was in the camp just last night where 56,000 people walked 100 miles to get to a camp in Diala. We have an obligation to speak out. Tragedy is we've lost so much moral authority in Iraq. Until we can hardly raise our head above the sinking sands of Iraq and Afghanistan, we could, for $1 billion in the Sudan, seek to regain the credibility that we've lost in Iraq. Iraq, a year later, we've lost nearly 1,000 lives. Iraq, 6,000 injured. Iraq, a country destroyed. Now only a cleric can in fact hold the peace. Not the CIA steering committee, but only a cleric. A religious state is in fact emerging in Iraq. We went down the pretext that we were threatened with imminent threat. No imminent threat. No weapons of mass destruction. No Al-Qaeda connection. Now we seek to rationalize a reason to go from invasion to occupation to conquest. It is a misdirection. We challenge Mr. Bush to use another course and challenge Mr. Kerry to make a break that we might move toward lasting peace, involve the international community in resolving that crisis. But don't stop there. In a few days from now, you'll hear much talk about 9/11. We all felt the pain of 9/11, the loss of lives, the loss of innocence, abounding fear. But strangely enough, on September 11th, we will stop, we will toll bells, we will commemorate the lives lost and the families hurt. But then on September 14th, 3 days later, we will unban assault weapons. How can you reconcile making America more secure if you, in fact, reduce port security? It could have been 20%. It's now down around 5% because we chose to give those who make a million or more an $88,000 tax rebate rather than $83,000. So our ports, well, you're more likely to get biological and chemical weapons. Our ports are less secure. We have fewer police on our streets. And now, come September 14th, Uzis and AK-47s will be again legal. September 14th, it will unban assault weapons. We intercepted 7,500 AK-47s coming into the East Coast just a few months ago. Suppose terrorists have 7,500 AK-47s. Every police chief in America says, stop the weapons, maintain the ban. So today we march to regain the integrity of our country. We march to regain our moral authority. We march to extend the ban on assault weapons. We march for more police on our streets. We march for more port security. We march for a plan to get out of Iraq. We, in fact, must use our will, our skill, and our diplomacy to end the madness. And then let's turn our pain to power.
That was Jesse Jackson speaking yesterday at the massive UFPJ march. Well, more than a half million people took to the streets yesterday to protest the Republican agenda in New York. The march was largely peaceful, but the day was hardly without incident. After the six-hour-long march, protesters did not just pack up their signs and go home. Various groups spread out across the city, holding protest actions into the late hours of the night, and many of them were met with violence at the hands of the NYPD.
In the theater district, a massive police presence greeted protesters who launched a peaceful yet relentless campaign on Republican delegates attending Broadway theaters as guests of the New York Times. Police conducted indiscriminate arrests without warning, catching protesters, bystanders, legal observers, and some members of the press using orange plastic fencing and netting material that fenced people in. Plainclothes officers riding unidentified mopeds were deployed on the streets of Times Square, where they rushed dangerously onto pedestrian sidewalks to block protesters' movements and pen them in for arrests. Protesters chanting at delegates coming out of theaters were forced away by police, who often followed them for several blocks. National Guild lawyers said police ordered protesters to disperse, then arrested them before they were able to leave. While bearing down on one group, a senior police official ordered officers, saying, quote, if they stop, if they ask a question, they get cuffed. During the parade earlier in the day, 15 people were arrested, including 9 charged with felony assault on police officers.
The arrests occurred after a papier-mâché and wood dragon was set on fire outside Madison Square Garden. One police officer sustained third-degree burns. Some 200 arrests were made yesterday, most of them for disorderly conduct. Over 400 have been arrested since Friday when protesters surrounded the Republican convention.
The first major demonstration came on Friday night when some 5,000 cyclists gathered in Union Square Park for Critical Mass, a monthly bike ride around Manhattan sponsored by the environmental group Time's Up. New York police made over 264 arrests that night in several locations along the bike route. Cyclists said the bike ride was peaceful and the police acted unreasonably. Most of those arrested were charged with disorderly conduct and held for 24 hours at Pier 57, a three-story block-long pier that's been converted to a holding pen for those protesting the convention. Democracy Now! Producer Elizabeth Press got on her bike with a camera mounted on the handlebars so she could record the Critical Mass bike ride as it went through the streets of New York with 5,000 cyclists. This is her piece from the Critical Mass ride.
My name's Becca Economopoulos. I'm here at the Critical Mass ride with thousands of other people on bikes and skates. And this is something that we do as a tradition. On the last Friday of every month, we meet at 7 o'clock at Union Square, and we take to the streets and we ride. And we don't have a permit. It's more about taking back public space and having a good time doing it.
My name is Bill DiPaolo. I work with Time's Up Environmental Group, and we are using our bikes in non-polluting transportation, and we want everybody to be aware that this is a positive thing happening, and not to be looked at as a demonstration, but a positive celebration.
We've been in communication with the NYPD today, as have the organizers of tonight's Critical Mass Ride, and what happens remains to be seen. I'm not quite sure, but we're here to document and monitor the police's reaction.
Hi, my name is Sarah Turner. I was on the corner of 2nd Avenue and 10th Street where the critical mass had just completed. The police came with a line of motorcycles and they started pushing the bikes and the bikers started pushing back. There was a man who was trapped under his bike and the police all grabbed him at once. One police officer violently pushed his face into the ground and put his knee on the person's neck. The other police officers quickly were shouting to get back as everybody was chanting, "Let him go, let him go." The police started taking out their batons and swinging them at the protesters. The protesters were chanting, "The whole world is watching." One police officer took out his pepper spray and said, "Get back or you're all going to get sprayed."
My name is Elizabeth Press. I'm a producer of Democracy Now! I was just arrested at 36th and 7th Avenue while documenting the critical mass bike ride. I pulled up to a red light. In front of me, the cops were arresting a mass group of bike riders. I pulled over to the side and put my camera on the arrest, and then the officer came up to me and said I was violating the law. After being detained, I was then released at 34th and 7th Avenue.
My name is Leaf. I am 19 years old. I was arrested for riding my bicycle. They put me in a in a bus, brought me to this place. It's like a pier. I don't even know where it was. I think it was on the west side. The conditions were terrible. I was like these big, tall fence cages with barbed wire at the top. The floors are covered in this motor oil type deal that gave me like a rash on my arm. It was terrible. And from there, we went to just cell to cell to cell, and basically I just got out just now. And
it feels like a really good plan to break us mentally and physically, a pre-planned system where people would be put in this very, very dirty facility and come out of the system mentally broken and physically dirty. And then even the police people in the downtown station were constantly asking us, "Why are you so dirty and crusty punks?" They were laughing at us, and I don't think they haven't been there. They haven't realized that they did it, that their system is doing it. And I think it was done intentionally to crusty punk any possible legitimized person that is arrested, so that when they come out, any picture taken of them is just like this dirty anarchist madness.
That report prepared by Democracy Now! Producer Elizabeth Press, with the reports of many other independent videographers and reporters around the city who've converged here to cover the Republican National Convention. Well, we then also, at the time we were in the streets, went to the corporate suites and to the parties that are feting the delegates and the journalists. Juan?
Yes, hundreds of companies, trade associations, and other lobbyists are spending millions of dollars this week around New York City to entertain top members of the Republican Party in town for the convention. Campaign finance and ethics laws allow these groups almost unlimited spending at conventions, which provides the corporations the opportunity to wine and dine delegates and party officials and have unprecedented access to them. Over 200 parties are planned this week alone.
The first big party for the delegates and the journalists was thrown by media conglomerate Time Warner on Saturday. Democracy Now! Was there. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, at the same time that he is welcoming the Republican National Convention, throwing the party in a Democratic city, has tried to distance himself at times from President Bush, but at the same time is here to be a main person in this party that is taking place this week. At the Time Warner celebration, I tried to ask Mayor Michael Bloomberg whether he supported Bush's invasion of Iraq. He refused to answer the question. His aides continually escorted him away, though he was talking with reporters throughout the party. I tried to ask him the question three or four times. Security guards, the aides continually pushed me away, and they said that I was harassing him. Each time, the mayor would look at me, and he would then turn away. An aide to Bloomberg eventually approached me.
I'm asking the question.
In his way, you're getting the mayor's security details.
The mayor is answering questions from reporters. He's at a press party. I'm asking him a question.
Try to do it without trying to block his path.
I did not block his path. I was behind him. I'm being very respectful.
An aide to Mayor Michael Bloomberg Saturday at the Time Warner Media Party. At about the same time, I was in pursuit of the mayor to ask him whether he supported the invasion. I bumped into New York Governor George Pataki and asked him the same line of questioning.
Governor Pataki, did you support the president's invasion of Iraq?
I'm going to talk about that. There's no question. You know, you're here in New York, and we were attacked. And we know there are those around the world who want to attack us again. And I just think the president has provided extraordinary leadership to help protect us from those who would launch those attacks.
Governor, you said you wanted to take a piece of Saddam's statue and put it in the foundation of the World Trade Center. Why? Do you think there was a link?
Well, there's no question in my mind that Saddam Hussein was an evil man and a terrorist in his own right.
But do you think there was a link?
Thank you.
That was New York Governor George Pataki, again asking him about his statement that he wanted to take a piece of Saddam Hussein's statue in Firdaus Square that the U.S. military had pulled down and put it into the new foundation of a new World Trade Center. He wouldn't answer completely if, in fact, they do that. Take the piece of the statue and put it into the foundation. It may be the first time that there is a link between Iraq and 9/11. Well, at the party, there were thousands of journalists. We bumped into a veteran correspondent, White House reporter Helen Thomas, who's covered for 50 years the presidents of this country, and asked her what was on her mind. Helen Thomas at the Time Warner celebration of reporters. When we come back, we'll get more from the party, and Helen Thomas will join us in the studio. This is Democracy Now!, the battle for New York. Stay with us. This Little Light of Mine here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, the Battle for New York. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
Yes, and we were discussing the party, the Time Warner Party for journalists and delegates. And Perthap Chatterjee of Corp Watch was also there. He filed this report for Democracy Now!
Free alcohol from champagne to custom-ordered cocktails, gourmet cuisine from around the world, as well as a variety of cultural acts ranging from jazz music to mime artists, one hand to entertain the 15,000 members of the media at the giant Time Warner Center near Central Park. In addition, models dressed up in skimpy clothes made up solely of covers of Time Warner magazines paraded the company's products for onlookers.
My name's Camilla Barungi. These are all the Time Warner magazines, so what a much better way than to show it in fashion, because this is New York, and so I'm wearing Time Warner couture today. I think that the company is doing a great job of letting people know what's out there and what's really going on. You can see the young people, teen people, there's people, there's Real Simple, there's Sports Illustrated. I mean, you know, if one company can do a good job of letting people know what's going on, I mean, more power to them, you know what I mean?
Many of the reporters who had arrived to cover the convention apparently agreed and were happy to mingle and enjoy the company's largesse.
My name is Robin Abkarian. I'm a reporter for the Los Angeles Times.
And what's your beat and why are you here?
I'm a feature writer on the political campaign this year, so I'm here to write feature stories about the convention.
And who's throwing this party, and why do you think they're throwing the party?
The party is thrown by the mayor, Bloomberg, and I assume Time Warner and AOL are involved to some extent. I don't know actually who's footing the bill. This is almost irrelevant in terms of Time Warner's larger corporate goals. If Time Warner wants to get things done in Washington, believe me, Time Warner has better uses of its time than to throw a party for a bunch of out-of-town journalists.
But a few reporters were a little suspicious of the company's agenda.
My name is Maurice Pinson, and I work for New York News Network, which is an online news service, nynewsnetwork.com.
And so what are you doing here? Who's throwing this party and why are you here?
I guess I came here to get a sense of how the Republicans and the whole convention is sort of trying to, compromise the reporters here. It's hard because you sort of want to be objective in analyzing what everything is going on, but you're sort of partaking in the fun also. So you really can't sort of be objective totally.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire media magnate, was at the party tucking into deep-fried spring rolls at the Thai fusion table. So we took the opportunity to ask him a question as he munched on his dinner.
Can I ask you a question about media ownership and the concentration of media ownership? What do you think about how it represents, it's represented here? Politicians are spending $1.5 billion on advertising today. Do you think it's because they want favors from politicians?
If media reduced the rates that they charge for advertising, the politicians wouldn't spend all that money and you wouldn't have a job.
Also enjoying the free food and drink offered by Time Warner was legendary boxing promoter Don King, who told us that he was backing the Republican Party and George Bush for president.
I'm a supporter of America, and I think that George Bush is best for America at this particular time, and especially for the black community. I'm really selfish when you go to this for the Latino and the blacks, upward mobility, elevation. George Walker Bush is reaching out and extending the hand of inclusiveness, economic empowerment, education. You know, then in, how urban development. He got Rod Paige. He got Alfonso Jackson. He's got Colin Powell. He's got Condoleezza Rice. Top-level position. No president in the history of this country has ever did that.
For Democracy Now! And Corp Watch, I'm Prothap Chatterjee with John Hamilton and Sarah Turner.
And you are listening to Democracy Now! And watching on Public Access TV, PBS, and the satellite networks. Democracy Now! Is breaking with convention. War, peace, and the presidency, the battle for New York. Some stations are running our full two-hour broadcast, others one. Whatever you miss, you can go to our website, democracynow.org, where we video and audio stream around the world. We're now joined by veteran White House correspondent Helen Thomas, commonly referred to as the First Lady of the Press. Helen Thomas is the most senior member of the White House Press Corps. She's served as White House correspondent for United Press International for some 57 years and has covered every president since Kennedy. President Gerald Ford once remarked, if God created the earth in 6 days, he couldn't have rested on the seventh. He would have had to explain it to Helen Thomas. Helen Thomas went from UPI to working for the Hearst newspapers, and we welcome you, Helen Thomas, to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. We've spoken with you on the phone. You're here for the Republican National Convention. We bumped into you at the Time Warner party. And your thoughts were not really right there in that corporate celebration. You were talking about Fallujah.
Yes, I said, and in fact, on Saturday itself, 14 people were killed in the one story that I saw, and 8 of them were children. I mean, why isn't every American upset? Our conscience.
In terms of the, have you seen these conventions develop over the years? Your thoughts on how they've evolved, especially the enormous impact now, obviously, that television has in either covering or not covering the events at the conventions?
Well, I think they're so cut and dried now, since we do have the slate, and they're sort of basically a celebration, and everybody has been homogenized to a point where their unity, harmony is supposed to be the name of the game. And I must say that I don't think that that's America. We usually have a difference of opinion, and it's allowed to be spoken. I like the conventions that were contested, where you had a real opinions cited, except everybody's been dumbed down.
What is your assessment of the George W. Bush presidency? You've covered 9 presidents, moving on to, well, we'll see what happens in November.
Well, it's the most muscular foreign policy that we've ever had. I think that America doesn't invade countries without provocation, and that's what we've done. And I think that it has tainted us throughout the world. We've really damaged our psyche, our soul, our image. The very fact that Secretary of State Colin Powell couldn't go to Athens because, I mean, which is the heart of democracy, because of our war policy. I never think of my country as being pro-war. I think it's the last thing that would happen to us. Of course, if you're attacked, it's different. But for us to invade a country is shocking to me.
In terms of, how do you see then, given that reality, why there's still, among the public, considerable support for the war? Clearly, it's been turning, but why so many Americans are still supportive of the president's policies?
He plays the fear card. From 9/11 on, everybody felt they had to be patriotic, American, and then it segued into a war where they continued that, and I think reporters contributed a lot by not rocking the boat and afraid of being also tainted as called un-American. But I really think that we fell down on the job from that aspect. In terms of the Americans, I think that the very fact that the president keeps saying that he had a right to go in and so forth, they want to believe him. But pure logic shows us that everything he said about going into war, the reasons, have proved to be untrue. And I don't know how that can be acceptable to any human being.
Well, what about the role that the press has played? We're seeing some mea culpas, or maybe kinda culpas. You have that New York Times A10 box, right, that says
a
letter
late,
from the editor.
But actually, New York Times was a lot more reluctant to support the war than the Washington Post, day after day for 2 years. They drummed up the war.
Now, you're with your colleagues every day. What do they say to you about this? What do the Washington Post, the New York Times reporters say to you?
Well, after New York Times did the mea culpa with a couple of editorials, I went up to the Post reporter and I said, when are you guys going to cave? And he looked at me as though I had dropped from Mars. But anyway, I guess each has to make their own decision. But the Post never came around. In 3,000 words, they basically said, maybe we should have put the story on page 1 instead of page 820, which showed that there was some doubt about what the president was saying. But, I mean, that's not a full-fledged apology. And I think the apologies are forthcoming. They should be. But more than that, I mean, you can't restore the lives. Thousands of people are dead.
Well, you've talked about the muscular foreign policy. What about the Bush administration's relations with and discussions with the press? Clearly, you have not been a favorite of the White House.
No, I'm on the blacklist, but that's okay, just so the questions are asked. But the president has not held a full-fledged news conference since April. And if he's reelected, I think there'll be even fewer and far between. He doesn't. These people are so strange. They think they have the authority. I mean, we should be the power. We have the authority. And he thinks he's president, and therefore he doesn't have to answer questions from the lowly press. And I think that even Kerry has some sort of strange idea about presidential authority. I mean, presidents have to be questioned early and often. And this is the only accountability that we have for them. It's the only forum in our society where a president can be questioned. It's a press conference.
What do you mean?
Congress can subpoena a president, but they're not going to do that unless it's very dire.
You said even Kerry. What do you mean?
Well, when he would still support the war, despite the fact that none of the facts stack up. And then he said the president should have the authority. Authority, you know? I mean, it was shocking. I think that's a very misplaced. Dictators have authority.
But what about the current crop or generation of journalists who take this, who allow it to happen day in and day out and really don't raise much of a furor about it?
Well, I think that the whole, as I say, the onus of being a patriot and being on television and also the fear of jeopardizing the troops, that you're not supporting the troops if you ask questions that seem to be penetrating or challenging.
You're unusual in the News Corps over the last more than 50 years, close to 60 years.
Well, I'm expressing my opinion now, which I didn't do for 57 years.
You're a woman.
I'm expressing my opinion now.
You're a woman, and you're Arab American. Mm-hmm. How
I'm American. I don't like hyphens. It's true, my parents came from Syria, but what has that got to do? Everybody's parents came from somewhere else.
Does it have an influence for you, do you feel? That gives you a unique perspective.
Of course, I have a cultural background of knowing that, but I don't think that I did. Anybody who knows me throughout the Vietnam War, I was equally adamant against the war of our choice. I felt as equally passionate in the sense that I don't think you should go into anyone's country without any reason that you can justify.
Well, we're going to touch base with you throughout the week. Helen Thomas has been our guest. We'll also link to our previous interview with Helen Thomas, who's written the book Front Row at the White House. Thanks for the memories, Mr. President. And we'll link to some of her questioning of the White House press secretary. Thank you so much, Helen Thomas.
Thank you.
That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by a remarkable team of reporters and producers, Mike Burke and Sharif Abdelkaddous and Jeremy Scahill, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, thanks to Dan Cashin and the whole team of independent media reporters around the country. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, our website, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.